I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Wow, what a show. Stuff going on, of course, all over Europe. Real Madrid, huge win for them. Even bigger win for Barcelona against Atleti. So much of the magic of the Metropolitano. We've had the FA Cup semifinals. But I think
quarterfinals leading to semifinals.
Whatever. All right, there's one that obviously stands out. That's what we're going to talk about. It's Manchester United against Liverpool. Look, it was wild.
Yeah.
It was epic. Maybe it took something wild and crazy and outside the box to stop Liverpool. Whatever it was, I think we can definitely say two things. United's players did not give up on Erik ten Hag.
Nope.
And Erik ten Hag, can we give him a little bit of love to keep that group together, to hang in there for so long against Liverpool?
Yeah, sometimes under pressure, against the domination of Liverpool, because that second half, really, Liverpool were in control. And I'm not sure how many people within that stadium or like us watching on television thought there was a way, there was a scenario where United could actually win that game, because it looked like Liverpool were 2-1 up and really in control, creating chance after chance. But yeah, credit to United and Ten Hag. They never gave up. They kept believing. They kept putting a shift in, even if it was difficult, even if they didn't have much of the ball. And in the end, they got their rewards, because, yeah, Liverpool made mistakes and Liverpool obviously physically went down, especially during extra time. But United, I just love the energy that they had. I love the fact that the fans kept believing, were still behind them, and they found a way. And even if you take advantage of mistakes from the opposition, that's part of the game. And that's what United did on their third and fourth goal, and well done to them.
So, mistakes on the opposition, mistakes, you know, these games will turn ragged, and we'll break down further how ragged this game actually got.
Mm.
But United had a chance to win it in the 90th minute, which I find absolutely wild. It was like the last kick of the game.
Yeah.
Rashford, I don't think it was a great finish from him. I think he was probably shocked to be so open.
Yeah.
But then it's almost like a carbon copy of when they did score their winner with that counterattack, which was finalized by my man Amad Diallo.
Mm.
Where again, it's off a corner kick, and then one missed tackle or one little giveaway from Elliot, and they go right up the other end. It's rare to see that twice in one game in those, you know, when the team's been so good.
Yeah, I mean, the first one is slightly.
Is it just a Liverpool gambling to win the game?
No, the first one wasn't, because that was an attack from United. It's a great ball over the top for Rashford, but in the box. The second one is a counter attack. I think if Elliot and Endo maybe communicate a little bit more, maybe they are a little bit tired and jaded and they don't make that mistake, it doesn't go 2v1 with poor Conor Bradley, who, by the way, slips or stumbled before Amad Diallo takes the shot. So the first one is a great play by United. The second one is really good counter-attacking, but the mistake from Endo and Elliot really is bad. As bad as the Darwin Nunez one, because there's no way Darwin Nunez should play the ball like he does that leads to the Rashford goal and the ball from McTominay. So Liverpool shot themselves in the foot as well. They missed their chances. They hit the post. Even if they were a bit lucky on some of their goals, they were in control, and they also can have themselves to blame for it. But well done to United for keep believing again. And Ten Hag put Bruno Fernandes centre-back and Anthony a left-back or left wing-back, if you want, to try to go for it in the end. And he got rewarded. To be fair, whether you lose with another goal or you come back into the game, Mel is trying, so well done for him for trying.
It's funny when you make that point, whether you lose another goal or... I thought back to the Man City Newcastle game the 24 hours earlier.
Yeah.
And it was like Eddie Howe instead figured like, ooh, it's better if I just lose 2-0 than...
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Whatever. That's
not it's very true.
We'll get to that later. We've talked a lot about how this is Jurgen Klopp's kind of farewell tour, leaving the club in June, but he obviously, like, nobody likes losing in that way when you played well. We all saw that exchange with a Scandinavian reporter. And I say Scandinavian because that's all I'm told. I don't know if the dude's
Swedish. Yeah, I don't know from which one. Yeah,
you know, it's all really the same, right? You know, they all just pretend to speak different languages just to confuse the rest of us, just to get more votes.
Sorry, Scandinavian people.
But I mean, I was not, you know, you see Klopp get testy sometimes, but is this an indication of his state of mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not the first time that we see one of his reactions like that when there's a question he doesn't like or it's a bad question. I mean, this question was, I think it was clumsy the way it was asked, because the guy talked about intensity and the club was like, hang on, we've played a million games in 3 days. We've got half a team injured. don't talk to me about intensity and stuff. So I understand Klopp's, that he didn't like the question. If the question had been turned differently on, like, you've played a lot now with only half your squad available, did your players get tired? Something like that, it would have been a very different answer. The fact you said to him, like, well, where was your intensity today? That was not the way of asking.
Yeah, and we're going to break this down a little bit more. It is a weekend where I think a lot of managers caused a lot of talking points on based on what they said after games.
Just to continue on the club, Gabby, because our Nader Manua, the game was on ESPN, was next to interview Klopp, and he thought, uh-oh, maybe this is not the best. But Klopp was fine with him. He was in a better mood. So clearly the question rattled him a bit, but after that he was fine.
Maybe he just likes Nader more.
Yeah, maybe he likes Nader more. I think there's something to say about Liverpool's fitness, like physical, because obviously when you play so many games, when you only have half of your squad fit, or I know some of the players are coming back now, but you still have players injured and big players injured like Alexander-Arnold, like Alisson, like Jota, there will be a point where it will take its toll on you, I think, physically. And yeah, you can have the best manager, the best fitness coach, some of the best players in the world in your squad. There's a point where it's difficult physically, and I think you saw that a bit in extra time.
Maybe you saw it a little bit. It doesn't change the fact that you're 3-2 up in extra time with 15, 20 minutes to go.
Right? Yeah.
Or where whenever the Elliott goal was, right? So you conceded two goals, right?
Yeah, that you gave away, by the way. The Darwin
mistake.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's not an intensity. It can be maybe a fatigue thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think Liverpool had done more than enough to put the game away before.
Yeah, this should
I think these were mental errors that might have been partially caused by fatigue. But I don't think Liverpool need to play with that intensity to beat this United team. They can beat them with quality too.
Yeah.
Because they have better players.
And they were superior. I mean, there's good stuff from United the first 20 minutes. And after that, Liverpool.
So between that, between the fact that, you know, now we've coming up on an international break, some of these injured guys are coming back. I don't know if, you know, he put Gravenberch on the bench just because he needed to fill a spot. But I'm assuming the guy is on his way back to fitness. Mohamed Salah is on his way back to fitness.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem is some of your squad players are just not producing for you. So when we see Luis Diaz and Darwin Nunez run themselves into the ground, well, gee, it's also because he doesn't trust Cody Gakpo to contribute anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he had to play him in this game because he had to take Salah off. But he's just not working. Mm. So I think it's more some of those situations. One guy who I do think that they really miss, maybe he's not as flashy as Curtis Jones. But I put it this way. Klopp's not using this as an excuse, right? He's just talking about the many games that they've played.
Yeah, but is it really an excuse? I think it's a fair point.
I think it's a fair point, but I think it's a fair point that's faced by Liverpool's peer clubs, peer club, which is Manchester City. Perhaps not United. And then if you look at the injuries this season, I don't want to be the guy, because this always happens, like, oh, this team's medical staff, the other team's medical staff. But the reality is City have had very few significant injuries, you know, this season. Haaland out a spell, De Bruyne in and out,
Grealish.
And Grealish now, right? I mean, that is nothing compared to what Liverpool have had.
No, for sure.
It's part of the game. That's why you have these big squads. I mean, I think Liverpool lost this because United kept going. United could have collapsed. There's a parallel universe here where Old Trafford says, screw this, we're embarrassed again. Why do I have to go and see this freaking Muppet show on the pitch? And it said it didn't happen. And this brings me to somebody who I've been really critical of, because I think he's deserved it, because I think he hasn't produced. And in this game, he missed a couple big chances, but he also came up big, and I thought he played really well, as Rashford. Mm. I think he played a big role in G-ing up the crowd. Because it's one thing for McTominay to wave his arms around and give you effort. Yeah. He's going to do that, but ultimately, quality-wise, he's still McTominay, right?
Yeah.
Bruno, another one of these leaders, it's always there. The leadership's always there with Bruno. But Rashford, I think, almost, in some ways, almost reconnected. If that makes any sense?
Yeah, completely. I think the underwhelming season from a United point of view is also because it's an underwhelming season from a Rashford point of view.
Yeah.
And I think the two are very much linked.
But could this be where he turns the corner?
But maybe. But we've said that before too. You know, we've said that before about United as well. Or You know, they win two games in a row. We say, oh, it's okay now, they're better. I still see things when I watch that game structurally, tactically, that don't make any sense at all. Like that, I was going to say space between the line. It's not even space between the line. It's literally the Atlantic Ocean between the line, between whether it's your back four and your midfield, or the back four and your midfield two, plus the rest of the team. You just, at that level, this is not acceptable. From a manager like Ten Hag should not have any of his teams playing like that. So there's still clearly a lot of things that are not right. But if at least you get the best out of Rashford, that you get, you know, defensively, Onana again made some good saves, I thought. If your team's still believing and you put the effort in and you don't give up, then I think that can take you places. Is it good enough for a top five finish? I'm not so sure, because I think Spurs and Villa have been better than United in the league this season. That's very simple.
And they have better coaches.
Yeah, certainly.
And more points.
But maybe this is something. Maybe the worst thing that actually happened after this game is that Ten Hag doesn't see Spurs for another 2 weeks. And they don't play again for 2 weeks. Because maybe after a performance like this and a win like this.
Yeah, you want to challenge.
Completely. And then you go again in 3 days and say, look, we've got that momentum, that dynamic, all the energy, the fans are on side. We play again at Old Trafford. Then we go and win. And now you can't even build on this. Because by the time we go back to the Premier League in 2 weeks' time, it's not that we won't remember this game, but it's just like everybody would have moved on to something else.
On Ten Hag, the flipping the fullbacks around, which you can say, look, this is something that, you know, other coaches have done in the past. Yeah. Flipping him around for this big game.
So Dalot and Wan-Bissaka.
Yeah. And we know Dalot can play both flanks, whatever. But
yeah,
I hadn't seen Wan-Bissaka play. I'm sure he has before, but I hadn't seen him play on the left, right? And he's primarily a defensive player anyway. It's not the big... I mean, I'm not saying this is what helped United stay in the game, although I think they both did a good job. Dalot later deputizing at center back, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it shows Ten Hag is still trying to tweak, still trying to look for answers. That guy has not given up, and he's not as stubborn and inflexible as some people might have thought that he was, right?
Yeah. But I think you know that Salah is going to start right winger for Liverpool. So you maybe play your best defender that you have 1v1 against him, especially if he's right-footed, because Salah is going to come inside onto his left foot. Other managers have used that trick before, putting a right footer.
Okay, but Ten Hag hasn't. So that's pretty cool.
No, but yeah. No, I think he's good. But again, I think the way that he kind of threw the kitchen at the sink. The kitchen sink at it. In extra time, they finished the game with two defenders, really. And that was it.
So, and one of them was Maguire.
Exactly. So I think for that, I deserve credit, because it's obviously, it's either you explode, but you lose. If you lose 3-1 instead of 2-1, it's okay, you still lose. Or you come back into the game the way they did. And well done. And well done to your boy, Ahmad Traoré. I know you're the biggest fan. Even with the red card.
Ahmad Diallo, as he is known now.
Yeah, Ahmad Diallo. Even with the red card, we forgive him, of course, because it's a lovely finish. Like, maybe Kelleher should do a little bit better, because it looks from a long way that this is what Ahmad Diallo is going to do. But still, the precision is perfect. They play that 2v1 very, very well, even if Conor Bradley, like I said, stumbles a little bit.
Okay. I love, as you know, the Ahmad story. For those who don't know and don't remember, this is a kid who was trafficked from his country, from the Ivory Coast. Mm. He was trafficked. He was given fake papers. He was given a different name. He became Ahmad Traoré.
Yeah, in Italy.
In Italy. He was given a new brother, Hamed Traoré, who's now his Napoli, and was a Bournemouth briefly. Yeah. And he was adopted by an Ivorian or by an Italian of Ivorian descent, or whichever way they did it, right?
Yeah, it was messy.
Look, he's gone on to make a good living and gets to play professional football, so you can say it's a happy ending. You wonder how many other kids went through this system, which is why it's important that these people are now behind bars. But then if you remember, when he signs for United, it's all that money. Mark Ogden doesn't like him. He has a difficult time. He gets injured. He goes to Sunderland on loan. I'm told he does well. I
really
know, because I don't watch the lower divisions. Then he comes back. And then to do this, and that joy in him ripping off his shirt, he said he didn't, didn't realize he'd already been booked.
Yeah, you could see on his face.
I, I mean, if you're not tempted to just say screw it and make my winger rotation him.
But we said he should have played more before. I don't know why Anthony would come on
because
before
Anthony's
him.
Because Anthony's there.
But I don't care.
Oh, by the way, can I say something? See, Anthony scores, right, mega deflection. I mean, there were a lot of deflected goals in this game.
Yeah.
Right? Which, hey, look, part of the game. Makes the game more exciting, right? And then running off it, I don't know if he was kissing the badge or pointing and stuff. I'm like, dude, you need to keep a very low profile until
he's
you
happy.
Start to, it kind of bugs me. If I were a United fan, it would really bug me.
Why?
Because
it's a two. You score the equalizer in the 88th minute.
It's fine, but don't give it the big one with the badge and stuff like that. No, it really bugs me. You've got all this baggage from all your off the pitch issues and women and stuff like that, right? You contribute absolutely nothing other than a couple stupid step overs, which, by the way, in space, you know, every single one of your teammates, except possibly Scott McTominay, can do too, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not the goalkeeper. Maybe not Onana, but still, right?
Yeah.
And then you do this, like, yeah, okay, well, whatever.
I don't want to be scored against Newport this season.
I need to see a lot more. If you're going to take this opportunity, sure. I just want to see work. I don't want to see badge kissing. I don't want to see giving it this and that because you don't deserve that right now, right? Like you take it from the McTominays, who you can mock for his lack of ability in playing football.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's there to be counted.
Yeah. Right? For sure.
Kobbie Mainoo, there to be counted.
For sure. I would never play a double pivot in midfield of McTominay and Kobbie Mainoo, by the way. Because poor Kobbie Mainoo.
Well, there's no Casemiro.
Yeah, no, I know. Because
you would have played Amrabat.
100%. No, don't give me the whole... That's why, tactically, there was that oceans between the lines because and McTominay cannot play in that position. Seriously.
If I can explain this too, if you watch it on television, right, it was very, very obvious. Same thing over and over again. But I also want to say, it's not Kobbie's fault. You cannot... If you're playing two in that position... One guy can't move on his own to fill the gap.
Definitely. Yeah,
this is where you as a manager,
I felt for
you
him,
say,
to be fair.
Because I think Kobbie actually reads the game really well. Yeah. I think he's a really smart player. This is when you have to change it. You say, all right, McTominay, you move further up. Alongside Bruno, we'll try to press in a 4-1-4-1. But you cannot be alongside Kobbie Mainoo and make all the wrong movements continuously.
Definitely not. But they got away with it, so well done. Well done. It's true.
Okay.
Against Fulham, similar pattern. They didn't. They got battered. And then this time against Liverpool, they got. And well done to them.
All right. More broadly on the game, as a neutral, was this fun? Or are you going to be snooty and point out all the mistakes?
I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved everything. But those were special games. Even if it was not perfect technically, by far. Really, by far. I just I like it. And I just like the fact that United didn't give up. And even if it looks like at times it was comfortable for Liverpool in the second half when they were 2-1 up, and you think, okay, they're playing with them, they're toying with them at times, surely they're going to score the third one and put this one to bed. Because they didn't, then it was still open. And I like the fact that those games are still open because you never know what can happen. And again, this would become a classic. We will talk about this FA Cup quarterfinals for a very long time, and rightly so, because of that incredible scenario. So I loved it, man.
On Liverpool, you just regroup. I mean, in the same way that you said it's bad for United that there's an international break now.
It's not ideal, yeah.
Not ideal. It's probably good for Liverpool, right? Not just to get people back to fitness, but also because you can kind of banish this game, right?
Yeah, completely.
You're still in the running for a treble of sorts, right?
It is a treble.
League Cup still counts, right?
Yeah.
And I think Klopp knows how to handle the situations better than most because he's been there and he's done that before.
Yeah,
when he's a treble, obviously. But
and then you will play them in the league again in a game that is, in a way, far more important than just an FA Cup quarterfinal. So there would be time for you to get one back on them.
You know you love your percentages. We still don't know because this is a fascinating head-to-head, by the way, Germany versus England for second place behind the Serie A in the European rankings. We had like the Freiburg West Ham game all of a sudden became pivotal.
And now West Ham Bayer Leverkusen, of course.
And now West Ham Bayer Leverkusen.
It could only be down to that one as well.
Let me make this very, very simple, all right? Spurs fans, Villa fans, United fans, get behind the mighty Hammers
and Arsenal
against Bayer Leverkusen.
And Arsenal, Bayern Munich. If Arsenal beat Bayern Munich, I think it's over.
Yeah, I think it is. I think you're asking a little too much.
I'm just saying.
If you want Spurs fans to get behind Arsenal.
Do Spurs fans want the Champions League? Get behind Arsenal then.
I love all these permutations. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Barcelona march into the Civitas Metropolitano and destroy Atletico Madrid 3-0. Jules, I thought they were supposed to be invulnerable at home.
They were.
And is there a newfound belief in Xavi's crew?
Well, maybe since he announced that he was leaving at the end of the season. They've been good. They've been very good lately, of course.
No, they've not been good. They've had good results. They've played really well.
Game.
They played really well against Getafe. They played really well here.
Yeah.
They were better than Napoli, but that's no great shake.
No, maybe.
The rest of the time, they haven't actually been really good. I just wanted to spell
Even this game showed that they can't do it over 90 minutes of consistency because the first half hour was not great, for example.
I think it was actually bad.
Yeah.
And I think they need to build yet another star, a colossus of Mark. In fact, they should name they should rename the Camino. They talk about naming rights. They should name it the Marc-Andre Ter Stegen.
I mean, he had some couple of really, really good stuff. But you win. And I saw Deco coming out after the game saying, we're going to still try to convince Xavi to stay. I don't know if that's the answer. However, this is 5 wins in a row for Xavi over Simeone. It's incredible for Barca against Atleti. El Cholo has never beaten Xavi, even when they were playing against each other. This is huge. I love Lewandowski and his contribution. And you remember we said, I can't remember when he scored those two great goals. As a finisher, and you see on his goal, to hit it the way he does, going backwards, it's amazing. Two assists is great. That he can still do at his age. There's a lot of things he can't do anymore, not as well as before, but that he can still do. Without Lamine Yamal, you knew that Joao Felix would score, obviously, against his former team.
How annoying is he, though?
I know, but still, you knew it. So I'm worried about Atletico, even after the Inter Milan win. And maybe it's a little bit of some key players were on the bench, no Griezmann, no Koke, etc. But well done, Barca. Chelsea also threw to the FA Cup semi-final, Gabby, with a 4-2 win over Leicester City at Stamford Bridge. Were you impressed by what you saw? And what did you make of Mauricio Pochettino's asking fans to trust him?
All right, so look, I thought if you told me Chelsea are going to score twice in the first half and get a penalty, you figure, hey, this is great. You know, it might just be Leicester City with a bunch of players out, whatever, but this is exactly what you want. And then Di Sassi has his brain fart. And by the way, Robert Sanchez.
Yeah, what is he doing there?
Why does all the blame go on Di Sassi, right?
I agree.
Whatever. And then, of course, the second one's a wonder goal. And at that moment, Stamford Bridge has said that we've had it. They're just absolutely brutalizing Pochettino, Raheem Sterling. But Sterling's free kick, went out onto the King's Road.
We haven't found the goal yet.
And then they get the late goals and a bit of magic from Cole Palmer. Now, in those situations, I think if you're a Chelsea fan, what you want to hear from Pochettino is like, look, you know, tough game, no Enzo, whatever. We screwed it up, but look, then we turned it around. And isn't Cole Palmer good? And wasn't it nice when Robert Sanchez went and patted Di Sassi on the back and we're resilient? We want to bring silver. No. Instead we get, oh, you need to trust the club. What? What? Oh, it's not about trusting me. You need to trust the club. And the club put me in charge. Listen, don't make it about you. You have excuses. Your first season, I don't think you've been good. I don't think you've played to you've performed to your level, but you've got mitigating circumstances. But asking fans to trust the club. Okay, from 1996 to the present, do you know how many times Chelsea have finished outside the top six? I will tell you, three times.
Yeah, the season before Conte.
Once, yeah, when they finished 10th.
Yeah.
And then last year, and they'll be outside the top six this year. In fact, so no, you're not going to trust the club because the club have to earn your trust. This is not the same club that was there under Roman Abramovich who were playing in Europe every year and winning titles and Champions Leagues and whatever. This is a different club with different people. And so far, they have absolutely pooed the bed.
Yeah.
So no, you build the trust over time. He doesn't help himself when he says these things.
No, I know. His communication has been poor. We've said that.
Two deflected goals and Manchester City beat Newcastle 2-0 to go through, Jules. But the visitors make it a little too easy.
I was super disappointed. I won't lie. Not really sure about the tactics from Eddie Howe, the way they played. I mean, I still think Alexander Isak is a wonderful, gifted player. And I think at times he does things for such a big guy that I'm like, wow, okay, I love it. But overall, this was poor from Newcastle.
Two shots on goal. They didn't even try.
Exactly. I was going to say that. Exactly. They didn't look like they were trying. They
and you conceded your two goals early, so you still had the whole game for these trying. Whatever.
Bayern destroyed Darmstadt away 5-2 despite being a goal down. Jamel Musiala scores a worldie and Harry Kane breaks another record with his 31st league goal of the season.
Musiala's unbelievable. He lined up on the left.
He glides. It looks like the board is just...
But he was basically... His average position was basically as a number 10. This is where he belongs. Yeah. And I think eventually this is what he's going to do. Defensively, I think it's weird. Upamecano on the bench and Kim on the bench. Yeah. This is not the first time. With Dyer. This record about Harry Kane, it's a Fugazi record. It's a nonsense record. It's like some marketing guy. Let me come up with silly records.
No,
it's 31 goals. It's the most goals by a newcomer to the Bundesliga. Wait, what is this? The Rookie of the Year contest? It might be fun if he was a kid, but he's not. He scored 213 Premier League goals.
Also, now every weekend, if he scores, he can add up one. Yeah, he breaks his own record every week.
There's one record that's relevant, which remains Lewandowski's record, and he's pursuing that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Jules, we're not done because we got more quick hits.
Yes.
Real Madrid went 4-2 away to Osasuna. Jules, two games without Bellingham, two fine performances and 8 goals scored.
Yeah, Vinny stepped up again very early on, score which made it easier. We saw Brahim being good, scoring a lovely goal as well. They conceded 2, one really late. And Osasuna away is a tough team. We've said that before, a tough team to go to. But it was very serious, very interesting, I thought. Tchouaméni at centre-back is clearly the way that I think Carlo Fana suddenly is seeing him. And I think he might play him in that position against Haaland and Manchester City in the Champions League as well. So, no, it was pretty, pretty good, especially when behind Girona dropped points. And even if Barca won, it was still a pretty good weekend for Real Madrid.
I love this 4-2-2-2 system. I wonder if it's something you can replicate with Bellingham.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, Vinny scored 2 goals, as we just mentioned, but also will be suspended after picking up a booking in the most silly way.
Yeah, so he had a penalty appeal, which, by the way, was not a penalty.
Nope.
And then he remonstrated with the referee. And then he starts laughing in his face, like sort of guffawing, like throwing himself around. Dude, don't do that. And obviously the referee rightly booked him. This is really stupid.
Yeah.
And this is the third straight game in which he's done something dumb. The other two, he was pushing opponents. Yeah. Now he's laughing in the referee's face. Ancelotti took him out late in the game. I think maybe because he was so on edge and said, oh, what if this guy gets himself sent off?
Yeah.
Sent on Arda Güler, who hit the crossbar from midfield.
What a goal that would have been.
He needs to stop.
But Carlos said he has to deal with the pressure.
But it's better, fine, the pressure, like, it's fine. But it's not the referee who's kicking you or abusing you or whatever.
No.
And by the way, this one was not a penalty. So shut up.
Yeah.
Tottenham Hotspur had the chance to move into the top four, but instead turned in what Hongmin Son called an unacceptable performance at Fulham. They lost 3-0. Jules, are they being Spursy again?
So I think since the turn of the year, and yeah, there was... the 4-0 win at Villa, for example, last weekend was great, especially in the second half, not so much the first half. So he hasn't been all bad. But since the turn of the year, I think he's been a bit more difficult for them. I think opposition I've found a way, I've worked them out a little bit. They maybe not as sharp, certainly in that game. They didn't really turn up. They didn't show up at all. And yeah, they had a couple of chances. They could have scored, maybe should have scored. But I thought they were poor, really, really poor. And I think Ange had a go as well, saying like, you can't just turn up and expect the win to come to you. You can't take anything for granted in this league, which is right. And Son said the same, but I think this was a roaring, really roaring performance.
I think Ange Ball only works if people are brave and intense and have the energy to go out there and the willingness to go out there on the day. If one or two things aren't right, you're going to look really foolish.
Yeah. Inter held to a 1-1 draw at home to Napoli, but this was overshadowed by what happened between Juan Jesus and Francesco Acerbi, Gab.
Yeah, so obviously Inter still had the hangover from the Champions League elimination on penalties against Atletico Madrid. But I want to focus on this incident between Juan Jesus and Francesco Acerbi. They're kind of grappling on a set piece. It gets quite violent, but kind of like always kind of half joking. And the two do have a relationship. And then Jesus runs over to the referee, and it appears that what he says, because you can quite easily read his lips, he said, you know, he called me, used a word, which is not quite as bad as the N-word, but definitely in this day and age is a racial slur against me. Referee calls Acerbi over. They talk, and then the game continues, and there's kind of hugs and smiles between Jesus and Acerbi. The referee couldn't have sent Acerbi off because nobody else, in the moment, nobody else heard it, but there will be an investigation. What I think is interesting, we still haven't heard Acerbi's side of the story here. Jesus afterwards saying, well, he said something you shouldn't have said. I don't want to go back to it. But I did what I thought was right at the time. And telling the referee, sure. Then he says, I forgive him. What happens on the pitch should always stay on the pitch. And it's over, as far as I'm concerned. And the thing is, once you report a referee, it's not up to you.
It's not over.
It's over. It may not bother you, or it may bother you in the moment, but then afterwards, I don't need to see him banned. But not everybody's as strong as you, Jesus. And I'm not going to tell you what you should do for yourself, but think about the impact this has on other people.
Yeah.
So surely they must feel empowered to come forward. This code of, it happens on the pitch, stays on the pitch. It just doesn't work in 2024. It's nonsense, right?
Yeah.
So Acerbi could be banned for up to 10 games. I have to say, this would seem to be really out of character, in my view, for Acerbi, for what we know about him. Never been faced by these sorts of accusations in this way. The fact that we're talking about it, I think, at least shows that this is being taken seriously.
Mm.
Certainly more seriously than Juan Jesus seems to be taking it. Mm. Kylian Mbappe gets a start in the captain's
armband.
And bags a hat-trick as Paris Saint-Germain run riot in the second half against Montpellier in a 6-2 win.
Yeah, three goals. I mean,
but you'd rather talk about Mbappe than Danilo Pereira's defending, yeah?
No, but the defending, I mean, Lucas Hernandez on the first goal, falling asleep, standing up, terrible, 2-2 at halftime. To be fair, Montpellier had a really good first half and then they collapsed completely in the second half. Vitinha was outstanding, got 9 out of 10 in L'Equipe ratings. 9 for Kylian as well. First time I see two players with 2 9s.
Best Vitinha in the world. I've been saying it for a long time.
For sure. Well done to them, but watch out those Kylian goals, especially the strike from outside of the box. It's just
outrageous. You don't always associate that with him, but then he pulls it out of his locker. It's incredible. Wow.
Juventus are held to a 0-0 draw home by Genoa, and it's now 7 points in the last 8 league games, Gab. And Max Allegri was very grumpy after the match, and Vlahovic got sent off. I mean, it's just not that night.
Vlahovic stupidly sent off at the end of the match, but I want to focus on Allegri. We've said, they've been playing better and dropping points here. I don't think they were that bad. In the second half, they created chances after he made changes and brought on Keenan Yildiz and Samuel Ealing Jr. They could have won this game. But Allegri, afterwards, he does the two ways with people in the studio. They ask them essentially, like, hey, why don't you play a front three since Chiesa
absolutely didn't work for him
in this game, right? And he says, look, your job isn't to ask me questions. Your job isn't to tell me what to do. My job is to coach a team and make the decisions. You guys just here just ask questions. You couldn't do my job. I can't do your job. And he threw one of his silly hissy fits.
Yeah.
He should know better. I don't know if the pressures get him. He's always been a little bit irritable. But you know what? They're asking the questions that fans want to know. Why don't they play a front three? Especially when Chiesa is going to be this
and
bad.
They have the players.
Yeah. So screws are turned on him. They'll still qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah.
Wild ending in the other FA Cup quarterfinal between Wolves and Coventry, Jules, with that Hodge Wright winner. What did you make of Mark Robbins and Gary O'Neill and the ball boy incident?
So I love the game. I love how Coventry really dominated Wolves for most of the game until the last 10 minutes where they conceded two goals. And you think, wow, how did they throw this one away? Because they didn't deserve to lose at all. And then somehow the miracle happened in added time when they scored 2-2 win. Okay, Mark Robbins, I don't know the guy. I obviously know him as a player before and now as a manager. He's doing a really good job at Coventry that he took from League Two in difficult environment and circumstances to take them almost going up last season in the playoff. And now this, great. I don't think you should celebrate like that in front of a ball boy.
You celebrate in front of a ball boy.
Yeah.
A ball boy who had been rolling, dropping the ball.
A lot of ball boys do everywhere in Oregon, okay?
Mark Robbins apologized for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then
Gary O'Neill
was really not happy with it, with the celebration. Waited for him after in the tunnel or near the dressing room. And basically said that it was a disgusting behavior, I think he said. Yeah. That's how he put it.
And you know why he's doing this? He's doing this to deflect blame from the fact that they're out. It's not that disgusting. But it happened.
He's got
he apologized.
Don't do it.
Yeah, this is the same.
But Gary O'Neill can't really give lessons, right?
Guys, you know what is disgusting is hypothetically getting yourself booked so that you can be suspended, so that you can stay home when your team needs you, so you can watch the Masters. That's pretty disgusting. Not this.
Bayer Leverkusen win away to Freiburg 3-2, and you book Patrick Schick scores again, Gab. I bet you love that.
Of course I do. The hero against Karabakh, not once, but twice, doing it again. Big win for them. Freiburg, by the way, shout out to cult hero Christian Streich, who is leaving the club.
Yeah, eventually. It was always going to happen.
A lot of VAR in the Premier League between West Ham and Aston Villa, Jules. Did Unai Emery get away with one here?
So I might be on the minority here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, the big talking point is really the last goal right at the end that was ruled out by VAR for handball. I thought Suchek fouled Skonsa from the beginning, even before the handball. I thought he pulled his shirt, he's all over him.
He totally does. There's like about four different ways you could have disallowed that
goal. All that controversy and Moyes not being happy. And I can understand your frustration when you think you've won the game because the ref obviously gave the goal before having a look. But I thought like, man, come on, it looks to me that the foul is even right at the start of it. So I've got nothing. I think the other two decisions are a bit more straightforward. The handball for Antonio is just after the break. I can see the handball. I saw it live watching on television. So I've got no issue at all. I thought that, it took a long time, but for me, it was the right decision.
Yeah, you know who I have an issue with? I have an issue with those Muppets, including people who write headlines in our profession about like varsical, varse, you know, VAR, farce. Isn't that clever? It wasn't clever 3 years ago. It's stupid now. And they're complaining that it took 5 minutes. Like it's ruined the game because it took 5 minutes. It didn't ruin the game. If this is the time they needed to come to the correct decision, again, I would hope that you look at it and you quickly realize, hey, look, there's a million reasons we could disallow this goal. You could come to it quicker. It doesn't ruin the game. It's at the end of the game. It's absolutely critical that you get the decision right. Yeah. There's a lot at stake for both West Ham and Villa in this game. Enough. It's not like it ruins you. To the middle of the game and breaks. It's at literally at the end of the match.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah. Milan rolled to a 3-1 win away to Verona. Christian Pulisic scores again, Gab. Some are saying that this is his best season as a pro. I mean, certainly the numbers show it.
It may well be. It may well be. He's contributing on the ball. He's contributing off the ball. Really, really big win for Milan this because Okafor started up front, got on the score sheet.
Yeah.
Theo as well. How about Theo?
Great goal. I mean, even wonder how he scored from there.
And then, of course, gets booked, but whatever. And also, everybody's taking for granted that the very handsome Olivier Giroud is going stateside. Is it true?
He wants to, because I think he knows there's probably no new contract from Milan, right? At his age now, they're going to move on to new strikers, a good one, maybe a backup one. I don't know. They already have, obviously,
Jovic. And he wants to go to MLS rather than Saudi?
I mean, he's always said to me that he wanted to go to MLS anyway. And now that he's met Lloris, he's in LA, I think the dream is to join him at LA. I think he knows that Griezmann won't be far behind.
Oh, can you imagine LA with Lloris, Griezmann?
Oh, and Giroud.
And Giroud.
Oh, my God.
You're the only thing that's missing there.
Yeah, I would go over. I would work for ESPN in Los Angeles, no problem.
Sergio Girassi is on fire, Jules. Speaking of strikers. 5 goals in 5 games. He's up to 22 in the league on the season. And Stuttgart win 3-0 away to Hoffenheim. Third place, locked up. Yeah, yeah,
locked up. Really, I think so. They're on the roll as well. They're playing great football. It's really good. He's so clinical. And again, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. I don't know if this can last. So whoever wants to sign Serhou Guirassy next season, good for you, because after a season like that, why not? I'm just saying, I've never seen him so consistent, so efficient, so clinical. I don't know how long. Okay. I just don't want this to be the only one season, and next season he goes back to 10 goals a season. Do you see what I mean?
It was obviously a freak event when he scored all those goals before his injury, but then he gets hurt.
Yeah.
And comes back and starts scoring again.
Yeah, yeah, true, true. And AFCON as well. Yeah, but just to remind everybody, all his career, he's been a 10 goals a season guy, right?
In a good year.
Yeah. Daniel De Rossi's bandwagon rolls on, Gab, as Roma beats Sassuolo 1-0. He looks like Champions League football next season after all, maybe, Gab?
Yeah, they could even. I mean, they're only 3 points behind Bologna. Maybe they can even pass them. Maybe he can even pass Juve. His results have been phenomenal, far better than Jose Mourinho's. Although, as some Jose Mourinho fans on the internet, diehard, show me, in terms of expected goals and goals conceded, his numbers aren't far off. In fact, they're slightly worse than Jose Mourinho's.
Okay.
So maybe Jose would have...
still done the same.
Would have done exactly the same. I don't necessarily buy that, because it's very obvious the style of football that they're playing is completely different. To me, maybe what this says is that De Rossi's been a little bit fortunate with his attacking football. But that really Roma's players really weren't
Look
that
at
bad.
Pellegrini, how he was under Mourinho and how he's now, exactly, the goal that he scored.
Exactly. Girona lose their fourth straight road game, 1-0 to Getafe. Jules, they're having the sort of run that Juve are having, and they're falling apart.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, all they have to do, really all that they need to do, is to hold on to that top four, third place, fourth place. Athletic Club behind are on great, great form, complete different form to Girona. But at least Atletico are not in a great time at the moment.
Am I a bad person for hoping that they fall out of the top four?
Well, yeah, you're bad. Why don't you want them to be happy at the end of the season?
It's MCO club. I want to see El Cholo in Europe. I want to see Athletic Bilbao in Europe. Big clubs, big historic clubs of fans, not clubs that are being...
But it feels like they deserve it, because for...
They did, but if they lose all their games, they're not deserving it anymore.
Yeah, okay, but if that happens between now and the next 10 games, fair enough.
If my aunt had wheels, she'd be my uncle.
No, I know. But Borussia Dortmund go down early, but come back to beat Eintracht Frankfurt 3-1. This is a big win, Gab.
So this was a big win because it comes after... You know, I mean, look, let's make it. This is a team that needs major therapy. Yeah. Right? This is a bundle of nerves.
Yeah.
So in midweek, they have that huge Champions League game against PSV Eindhoven. They score early. Kai Havertz says, hang on there. What happens in the second half? They fall apart.
Yeah. They're
absolutely battered. Luke de Jong shows us why you call them bad de Jong. Yeah. I mean, they really escape by the skin of their teeth, right? Never mind that their second goal came in total garbage time. So they go into this game against Eintracht Frankfurt. Eintracht Frankfurt, who could get back into the Champions League spots with a win or come close to it. And what happens? Hey, Nico Schlotterbeck, stupid back pass. They give up a goal. And this is when I'm thinking, oh my God, here we go again. And yet, and Frankfurt make it physical. They make it uncomfortable. Yeah. And yet they hang in there and they get the win. Daniel Malin again, late, important. Yeah. Diving header from Mats Hummels, a bit of chest beating. This matters.
Yeah. It's an incredible season when you think
about it. It's
Jekyll
and Hyde, but at least the fight back is there.
Yeah, he's there.
Also back on Friday, this was back on Friday, but how about Leipzig romping to a 5-1 win away to Köln?
Very impressive, Gab. Two goals for our boy Luis Openda, who really... Rightly, we praise Harry Kane and Serhou Guirassy, no problem. But I think not enough is said about the season that Openda is having. For a first season in Germany, after coming from France, where at Lens he had one disappointing first season and then a very good second one. But you can't say like he's had a lot of experience of that level of scoring. He's been on fire. And yeah, he's still not perfect. And remember when he missed that penalty. But this was great. Xavi Simons was amazing too. And this is good. And Leipzig, because Dortmund won as well, just 1 point behind. We don't know if that fifth place is going to be, is going to take you to the Champions League or not. So this is massive. This fight between Dortmund and Leipzig is massive for fourth place in case the fifth place is not a Champions League spot for next season.
And we should also say Köln not good this
season. Nah, but Gorka Guruceta bags two goals for Athletic Club de Bilbao, who win 2-0 against Alaves and pass overtake Atletico Madrid in the table in fourth place. Gab is up to a career-best 13 goals.
He's almost like La Liga's answer to Sergio Girassi. Like 2 years ago, he was at something called Amorebieta, who I think at the time were a bad team in the second division. And he's right up there now. He's been a big part of their success. As big as the Williams brothers? No. But he's really given them that presence and that finishing. Bilbao squad stretched this year with obviously the Copa del Rey and some of the injuries they've had as well. So he's been a big part of it and a big part of their success story.
Yeah.
Luton against Nottingham Forest was a classic relegation six-pointer and featured an unlikely hero for the whole side. I love this story. I knew. This is all you. You love this story.
I love this story. Well done to Luke Berry. You never heard of him. It's, of course, because he's
former
hardly
Cambridge
played.
Cambridge United star.
Yeah, who he scored with them in the fifth division at the time.
There is no fifth division. You're talking about the highest non-league tier.
Yeah, but it's still the fifth division. If you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and down, this is the fifth one.
It used to be called the conference. Now it's called something else.
National League.
The National League.
National League, indeed. And Luke Berry becomes the first player in Luton history, but one of the really rare in English football history, full stop, to have scored in each of the four professional divisions for the same club. So not for different clubs, but for the same club, for Luton. This was his first goal in the Premier League. Of course, he's hardly played. He never started, played only a few minutes there and there. But this time he popped out to score the equaliser in a huge game, as you said, against Forest, having previously scored in the Championship, in League One and in League Two for Luton. So amazing day. And he was interviewed after the game on Match of the Day here in England. And the guy said, hey, was your family here too? And no. It was just the poor guy, no family to watch this historical moment.
Didn't Steve Finnan do something like that for Fulham? Or am I making that up?
I don't know, maybe. I thought there was someone at Bournemouth as well.
It was definitely. Bournemouth, he kept all those old defenders.
Yeah,
together.
Those defenders.
They
exactly
said, oh, these guys
like
are rubbish. They kept or and they always did, right? They
Steve Cook or somebody like that, yeah. The game between Atalanta and Fiorentina, Gab, was postponed on Sunday after the Fiorentina chief executive, Joe Barone, suffered a heart attack. Gab, you know him well. This is a really sad story.
It is a tough story. The latest from Joe as we record this on a Monday morning is that he is in a critical but stable condition. Thoughts go out to his family. It is somebody I know really well. Hung out with him at the World Cup in Qatar, in fact, where he was there, hard to believe. This is a man who just loves football, and not everybody knows this, but obviously he's a New Yorker of Sicilian descent. Was involved really in youth football, grassroots football at all levels in New York before Rocco Commisso kind of put him in charge of. He was involved with the New York Cosmos, and then later when he bought Fiorentina, he said, "Joe, why don't you go and run the club?" And this is a guy who, he worked in a bank until then, but really spent all of his free time thinking about grassroots football, working grassroots football. Our thoughts and prayers are with him. Jules, you need to help me understand French football. Brest, who have no money and are just a body part, are second and are one of the stories of the season. But then they're held to a 1-1 draw at home by Lille, who really don't have much to play for other than Jonathan David's new contract. And of course, he scores.
Nah, they can finish top three, Lille.
Monaco, who do have money, lots of money. Yeah. They're third, but they haven't actually won at home since December 3rd, following their 2-2 draw with Lorient. Despite Austrian super coach Adi Hütter.
Yeah, and that was a terrible draw. They conceded in the first minute and almost in the last minute. Monaco, Lorient with not much in between, but it's a very important point for them as they're fighting against relegation. Monaco, the problem is the inconsistency. Home and away, to be fair, Gab. I really enjoyed the Brest-Lille game between second and fourth. It was great. Lille scored first with Jonathan David, of course, his 15th goal in 14 games in 2024, the best striker in Europe in 2024.
Are you sure it's not Harry Kane?
More than Kane, more than Sergio Girassi, but he's played more games, I think. But still, well done, Jonathan David. And then Martin Satriano leveling for Brest. It was just great. And I don't know where Brest will finish. they're a bit like a Girona type of story in the sense that nobody expected them to be there.
Oh, really? Do they have... are they 50% owned by...
No, that's the difference.
Ah, okay, so it's not like that.
So now you want them to qualify for Europe? I know you do, for the Champions League.
I'm pretty sure that they have the lowest or second lowest budget in Ligue 1.
Maybe not the second lowest, but yeah, one of the lowest. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's unbelievable right, okay. what they're doing.
And I'm pretty sure Girona do not have the lowest or second lowest budget in La Liga. That's all
and
I'm saying.
And Eric Roy, as we've mentioned before, Eric Roy of, like... you know, Sunderland legend, he's doing an amazing job. So well done to him. But Monaco, with that draw between Lille and Brest, really should have won that game to put more pressure and more gap between them and Lille and more pressure on Brest, but they didn't.
Having spent more time at the Stade Louis II than I care to remember, I can understand it is not exactly a cauldron of...
It's not
San Mamés or...
No.
Or the Boleyn ground.
On television, you could count the people who were in the stadium yesterday watching the game on television.
But still, this is freaking embarrassing, right? Yeah. No travel, like, you know, you sleep in your own bed, you show up.
Yeah, it's bad. It was a bad result. Okay. Really bad. Lazio beat, and also they had many mentions. Lazio beat Frosinone 3-2. Stati Castellano scores twice and dedicates his goals to Ciro Immobile, who had a rough week.
This is former Girona star, Stati Castellanos. And New York City FC star,
of
by
course,
the way.
Yeah.
So Ciro Immobile's had some sort of ups and downs with a bunch of... with one sector of the Lazio ultras, and I guess the fact that, you know, he scored 20 plus goals, what, 5-6 years in a row for them, means that they don't like him anymore, whatever, not enough for him. But this is unconscionable. He was confronted, he was with his wife and his 4-year-old outside the school, and he was verbally attacked and also physically attacked. I mean, shoves and stuff, nothing serious, but there's absolutely no words for this, frankly, other than the words from Lazio president Claudio Lotito, who happens to be Ciro Immobile's boss, who came out with some of the stupidest comments that I could ever hear of. Rather than showing solidarity, so by the way, solidarity the way Castellanos did, because he came over and he hugged Ciro Immobile on the bench. And by the way, Ciro Immobile is competing for a starting spot with Castellanos. No. Lotito, right? Like as evidence of, you know, the man who clearly, what was it Gigi Buffon says? Like, you got a trash can in place of a heart. I don't think it's a heart at all. I think it's just like a robot, you know, designed by some evil genius to offend people. He comes out and he says, like, oh yeah, well, and I'm paraphrasing here. Sue me if I get it wrong, Claudio. Basically says, well, he kind of has to live with it because, you know, I've been having death threats for years. Now, it's true that Lotito's had death threats for years and he's been living under armed guard. But you know what? It doesn't mean that you can go and minimize this guy and his 4-year-old son and what he's just been through. I mean, especially when this guy's your employee. It's not like he plays for a rival club. You're his boss. No sense of compassion, no sense of solidarity.
So bad, isn't it?
It's just such an awful, awful person. Maybe you should hire Gary O'Neill next. Jules, they're going to go down, but I've said all season that Almeria are the best winless side in history. I can't say that anymore because they won away to Las Palmas.
Finally. I mean, they rode their luck a bit, to be fair to them. But all the luck they didn't get before in the season, in games they should have won, they didn't win. This time they did. Las Palmas are decent at home this season. But in this one, it was always going to happen. You just didn't want to be that team. You know, it's a bit like when the Detroit Pistons or other bad teams in the NBA this season lose like 25 in a row. You don't want to be the team that they finally beat. It's a bit like that with Almeria. Well done to them. Finally, they changed them. They sacked their manager. Pepe Mel arrived. First game, a win. You're right. It's not going to be enough. They will go down. But at least they're still fighting and still alive. So well done to them. Ralf Hasenhüttl is back in football. He replaced Niko Kovac, who was sacked by Wolfsburg after the 3-1 home defeat against Augsburg.
Yeah, they hadn't won in 11 games. That's for so Nico. Bad. Like, he's great. You did great things with Frankfurt. You won a league title, reportedly, with Bayern. Yeah. But it's not working for you. I think Ralf Hasenhüttl is actually a really good
manager. Me too, I like
manager.
It.
You know, when I think of that kind of like German school of, gig and pressing and blah, 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 playing a million miles an hour. And I think there's a lot of people who essentially kind of blow smoke and don't do it well. Obviously, Klopp does it very well. Nagelsmann does it very well. There's a bunch of other people who are slightly chancers. You know, Hasenhüttl is legit. And I'm really happy. He had to go when he went at Southampton. But I'm really happy he gets a shot again And hopefully, I think he's going to keep Wolfsburg up and hopefully he can build something next season. Because again, I think he's a really, really good coach. Ben White has decided he won't be playing for England in the upcoming friendly. So you okay with that, Jules?
I've got no issue with it at all, Gab. If you don't feel comfortable, if you don't want to go, if there's something that is bothering you. I mean, this is someone who left a World Cup squad halfway through to come home because he was clearly not happy with something. So, yeah, why would you go and if you don't want to go? There's no point going if you're not fully on board with it, right? There's no point going when you have issues or when you don't want to because it's going to be counterproductive.
Maybe you go if you care about your country, you go to convince the manager that he should take you to the Euros.
Yeah, but maybe he doesn't want to for whatever reason.
He's clearly not incredibly fast about being part of a World Cup winning team because when he left England in Doha, they still had a chance to go and win the World Cup, right? So I don't know what the deal is with him.
So whatever happens in
Qatar. I know
there's
99 bazillion rumors about what the deal with him is on the internet, and that is one of the unfortunate kind of side effects. You can go look them up yourself about what's going on with him, and we can keep pussyfooting around this, but as long as he's straight up with Gareth Southgate and says, hey, don't call me because I'll tell you when I'm ready to be available for selection. I hope he and Southgate, put it this way, have that open relationship. I don't think anybody should judge him
unless you know exactly the reason.
But I also hope that he's been straight up with Southgate the same way Southgate's been straight up with him.
Yeah. The FIFA Council have announced a major revamp for the under 17 World Cup. Gab, your thoughts? I think I know what's coming.
This is a complete revamp.
I mean,
It's okay. So the under 17 World Cup, both men's and women's, used to be every 2 years.
Yeah.
Now it's going to be every year. They've expanded the Men's World Cup to 48 teams of under-17s. 48, that is a lot.
It's a lot.
They've expanded the Women's Shield to 24 teams of under-17s. And by the way, and I get this question from people, why are there fewer women's teams than men's teams? It's not fair, blah, blah, blah. The reason is because especially at U-17 level, but at senior level too, in the past, there's just a huge drop-off between the better teams, the richer countries, and everybody else. So 24 teams at U-17 might even be a bit of a stretch, but hopefully you'll still get competitive names. And I've also decided that for the next 5 years, all the men's will be held in Qatar and the women's will be held in Morocco. Different things. I have an issue with having this annually. It's just a chance for people to play. You know, why should they be every 2 years, every 4 years?
The under-17 and not the under-20? World Cup.
Because under-20, most of those guys are already professional. Under-17s are not.
Yeah.
This is a chance. You get a new generation every year, right? This is a chance for people to play.
Not sure about that.
Expanding the men's field. You know my thoughts on this. I got no issue with it. I like the fact of having it in one place because I think it... On the one hand, it's great when you have it in different countries. On the other hand, if those countries have to go and spend a ton of money on it and build stadiums they're never going to use again, the stadiums are already there in Morocco and Qatar. So might as well use them. But you were making a face here.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced. But let's see. I've watched the under-17 World Cup. I love it. You and I
now often... you're going to have to watch it every year.
Yeah, which is great. But you and I often look at the squad of the team that won 20 years ago to see who was there and who made it big and who didn't make it, all that kind of stuff. I'm just not sure how productive it is to have it every year. That's it.
What I wonder too is 48 teams, when you have it every year, which means you just get a next generation every year, right? Because until now, because it was every 2 years, you had kind of two years.
Yeah,
if that makes sense, two birth years.
Two generations, yeah.
I think the level is going to go down massively, significantly. But maybe it should be. Maybe it should be about giving everybody a chance to play rather than having high-level games that Euro snobs like us can watch streaming in the middle of the night, which is what
we're
going
to do.
How we roll. Jocelyn Gourvennec is out and Antoine Comboiré is back. Paris Saint-Germain cult hero.
Yes.
Can he save Nantes after their home defeat to Strasbourg?
We see the third manager again. Comboiré, as you remember, was sacked last season towards the end, probably at this stage of the season, more or less.
He was sacked by Paris Saint-Germain when he was going to win the title.
He was indeed. Well, he's replaced by Carlos, so you know, okay, we can understand.
But still.
Back at Nantes, what a circus this club is. Valdemar Quita, the owner, you know, who has a surgery clinic, including for your penis, if you want it bigger.
Talking about what? Penis enlargement surgery. Yeah.
I just don't understand how you can run a football club like that, him and his son. I hope the best for Kombouaré because obviously grew up watching him playing for PSG, so I like him a lot. And I think he's a good guy. Ish. So yeah, I think there are two. So two teams are going to go down. The third one is going to the playoffs. So I think Clermont are worse, Metz are worse than Nantes. Was it enough to sack Gourvennec? Did you actually give him a proper chance? I'm not so sure. He's been in charge for like 5 months or 6 months. I don't know. We'll see. But Kita, if I was a Nantes fan, it would really annoy me. And by the way, the youth teams has reached the final four of the youth league, which is amazing. The under 19, it was great.
And
they
all because of Valdemar Kita.
No, but
son.
They played at Le Bourgeois in front of like 30,000 fans. It was incredible, really. And yet you have that great side of your club with your academy, as we said, one of the historical best academies in France. And then your first team is a shambles week in and year after year. It's just, I don't know. I find that really sad overall. But
Gourvennec, of course, has a woman's name, but make it very simple. Greatest ever French player named Jocelyn. There's only one answer.
Angloma?
Angloma, of course.
But Gourvennec was a pretty good number 10, though.
Hey,
it was.
Angloma.
Yeah, Angloma.
Okay, all right.
Wild scenes at the end of the Trabzonspor-Fenerbahce game, Gab, this weekend.
Yeah, obviously, this is an up and down game. The visitors taking 2-0 lead with
top
with
the table
Fred.
Clash as well. Yeah, by
oh,
the
yeah,
way,
of course.
Not,
we should specify with Fred. Yes, the Manchester United Fred, yeah. Not the Brazil Fred with a mustache in 2014. I think that guy's long gone. That guy makes movies now, I'm sure. But then Trabzonspor get back into it. It goes back to 2-2. Then Michy Batshuayi. Mm. Oh my God. Remember him? Oh yes. Former Chelsea star, former legendary reserve striker. Scores for Fenerbahce to make it 3-2. At the end, there's a pitch invasion. It got really, really ugly because basically some of the Fenerbahce fans, or some of Fenerbahce players rather, is fearing for their safety, decided to fight back against the fans.
Yeah, attacked by the Trabzonspor fan.
So if you look at the headlines, people make a big deal. Batshuayi tried to hit a fan with a flying kick. I don't know what Batshuayi was doing as he's running off the pitch. That I think he's in the headlines because we know who Michy Batshuayi is.
Yeah.
And he's more of a name. The guy to focus on is a fellow named Bright Osasi Samuel, who used to play for QPR. I don't know if this guy did MMA before.
He must have, or boxing.
He tries to single-handedly take on half a dozen people. Needless to say, this is extremely, extremely dangerous. Especially since it looked to me, I mean, I'm sure there'll be an investigation, but just watching this big widescreen shot, it looks like there's a ton of stewards on the pitch. So normally what you expect players to do is just get down the tunnel and let the professionals kind of do their job. Maybe there was a different situation with him. I don't know. It's obviously not good for Turkish football.
I mean,
this
the
coming
state
a few
of
months,
football is terrible.
It's just sad because you've got great stadiums, you've got tremendous fans, and then you've got situations like this. Or remember a few months ago, the guy attacking the referee, the club president attacking the referee and sending him to the hospital. So we hope that this can be cleared up quickly. Chelsea women's coach and future U.S. women's national team coach Emma Hayes said, romantic relationships between coach and player, but also player and player are inappropriate. She was referring to allegations involving the Leicester City coach and one of his players. Jules, this upset a lot of people. She walked some of it back, saying she chose the wrong words. Did she open a can of worms here?
I think it's a very interesting debate. Obviously, it's something we have in France, like one of the big clubs, their coach is in a relationship with their best player. I mean, obviously she...
In the women's game,
yeah. She's seen it very closely. Obviously, I suspect in her own squads, certainly between players, not so much with her, but between players. So
well,
she,
and she's also brought in, I think it was Pernilla Harder and is it Magda?
Yeah.
You know, like she's had that situation that she's dealt with.
Yeah, exactly. So I think she would have seen it. So she would have seen maybe the consequences or the impact, if we can use that word, on the squads, on the mood of the players, maybe things like that. So I think maybe she picked the wrong words, but I think certainly it's an interesting debate to have. Not that you can ban like intra relationship within the squad. If two players fall in love with each other, what are you going to do? But there might be a point where there's a breakup, where there's an argument, where there's something where he has a negative impact maybe on your squad on a daily basis, you know. So I think it's really interesting. It's obviously something in the men's game that we don't have.
Because there aren't that many same-sex relationships.
Or certainly out there. Yeah.
Who are out there in the men's game, obviously. I mean, to me, this is your job. We need to take the guidance here from what happens, I think, in the real world, right? Most corporations, including, I would assume, this one that we work for, have rules that if you're in a position over authority of somebody, over somebody, you cannot be in a romantic relationship unless you reported HR and then they move somebody to a different department, stuff like that. On a football team, the reality is, even if, we're both just players. Yeah, but you're not both just players because one is a superstar, the other one's a reserve right back or whatever, right? Mm. So it needs to be handled differently. I think relationships between coach and player are just not acceptable, period. The same way they're not acceptable in the corporate world. I don't know how you deal with it. You have to deal with it sensibly and with sensitivity. Emma Hayes is intelligent and well-spoken, and she knows what she's talking about. There is a way, I think, to go and debate this constructively. I'm glad she simply walked the player and player relationships as inappropriate back, because that was an inappropriate thing for her to say. Pardon the pun.
Ugly story at Roma, Gab, after a youth team player reportedly circulated sexual explicit videos of a club employee who has since been sacked.
Yeah, so this is another story. This club employee is a woman in her mid-20s. The youth team player reportedly asked to borrow her phone, borrows the phone, sees a video on the phone of this woman having sex with a man who happens to be another employee of the club who's older, does what a lot of teenage boys do, unfortunately, starts circulating it everywhere. This woman has since been sacked, and the reason, apparently, reportedly, the reason she's been sacked isn't because she was having sex and filming herself, but it's because the man she was having sex with, who's also a club employee, who has also been sacked, they also discuss kind of raises and promotions as a result of them having sex. Well, obviously, I can understand that part of it. What I don't understand is the kid who circulated this video, as far as we know, thus far, no action's been taken against him. This is highly inappropriate. This is a major violation of privacy. This has to be dealt with. I don't know if he's a minor or if he's already 18. Whatever the case, that part doesn't sit well. But again, this case isn't over. Let's wait to see what Roma do. Jules, this brings us to an end.
That's it
for today. But it's International Week, so we're going to be back on Thursday. This is when we get all creative with content for the show. Until then, I love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjules.